And once it kicks in, there we go. Good morning. We are back. It is 10:20. The meeting is being recorded. We will do a roll call of board and staff members just to make sure everybody has returned. Dr. Castillo?
Here.
Mr. Leone?
Here.
Dr. Cornwall?
Here.
Mr. Greer?
I'm here.
Mr. Barton?
Here.
Ms. Cardoza?
Present.
Ms. Crowley?
Here.
Ms. Richardson?
Present.
And I'm Judy Chepius. All are back from the break, and we are back in session. Dr. Castillo?
All right, so the next item on our agenda, number 10, we have a presentation from the PTA Educational Programs by Drs. Jim Linsky and Lori Bordenave. And so I know the board has additional materials in their files, but we'll turn this over to you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Dr. And thank you for all
Mr. Linsky, Dr. Linsky, we're not able to hear you.
We can hear you, but it's just very muffled.
Oh, okay. Let me change my microphone. Where is that?
Is that better?
Much. Thank you.
I apologize for that. Sorry. What I was saying is Dr. Castillo and the rest of the members of the board and the board staff, thank you for allowing us to be here and take up some of your time in today's meeting. Karen, you run a tight ship watching this meeting today. It's pretty impressive. So what we want to talk about today, and hopefully it'll allow me to share my screen in a minute, is some common issues that the directors and chairs of the Arizona Physical Therapy and Physical Therapy Therapist Assistant programs, educational programs, have kind of come across. And actually what's kind of nice is now as a group, we meet fairly regularly, about quarterly or so, to discuss common issues that we want to address together. And so Dr. Bordenave and I are scheduled to present, but also in attendance at the meeting, I see Byron Russell, John Hike, Holly Carroll, Tracy Ellison, and Patrice Ayala, that all may have comments or input to what we're presenting. So I'm going to try to share my screen. Let's see if that works. Perfect. Am I sharing my screen?
Yes.
Perfect. Okay, so there's two topics we would like to discuss today with the board. One is the requirements for CEUs for new graduates in a licensing year. And then the second is a follow-up on a previous discussion we've had with the board regarding student inclusion into the category of assisted personnel. So first, I'd like just to tackle the CEU requirements and see what that discussion holds. What we need to discuss here are the rules R-424-401A.3 and R-424-401B.3. Both of these talk about, and we don't have issues with these rules, both of these talk about the initial certificate or initial license, if it's less than 1 year, that the CEU requirements are cut in half of what they would normally be for a licensee to renew or a certificate holder to renew. As written, these rules also require new graduates who are licensed or certified in the renewal year to complete those CEUs in the initial year of their licensure certification. In practice, what this means is someone who graduates in May from one of our DPT or PTA programs and gets licensed or certified in June or July, then must obtain CEUs prior to renewal in August. Now, I've been educating physical therapists here for over 15 years, and I don't ever remember this being an issue. We were informed by our colleague Peter Zwicky that one of his upcoming graduates was informed that actually they're going to need 6 CEUs prior to renewal of their certificate in August. And so we would like to request some clarification on this issue from the board. And we would like a grace period. In our letter, we asked for 9 months, as that we believe this requirement creates an undue burden onto the new graduates. And with that, I'm going to stop sharing for a minute. I mean, is this in fact the case that graduates this year will be required to, let's say if they're licensed in June, be required to have 10 CEUs for PTs and 6 CEUs for PTAs prior to renewing their license or certificate in August?
Mr. Harris, please correct me if I'm wrong. At this point, Dr. Linsky, the board is to listen, I believe, as the audience to this presentation. The rules that you have listed are the rules that are written by this board and have been the rules for several years. Mr. Harris, any additional information?
No, Judy, thank you for that clarification. You're right. It is on the agenda today just for a presentation by the Arizona PTPTA Educational Programs. If the board would want to entertain a discussion of this, they would need to re-agendize for that purpose. But I'll defer to the board if that's something that they would like to do in the future.
Yeah, and we'll likely discuss that at the end of this meeting if that will go on to a future agenda item.
Thank you. Dr. Linsky, you're muted.
That is the reframe of the last 2 years, isn't it? Sorry about that. So thank you for that, for those clarifications. So I guess I will continue with my presentation and then to the next issue, so I will reshare my screen. Oh, that's not working. Okay, can you see my screen now?
Yes.
Okay, so the next issue that we'd like to present to the board and hopefully have some set up some discussion later is the inclusion of students into the category of assistive personnel. This is a follow-up to discussion that was occurred during the board meeting in November 19th, 2019. And it is our continued belief that the classification of physical therapist students and physical therapist assistant students as assistive personnel is an incorrect classification and interpretation of the rules, statutes, and administrative code. This position was also presented to the was presented in 2019, and again in a letter 2022 via letter in 2022 from some of the directors of clinical education in the state. And we would like to request that the board further investigate these. Oh, so in response to that initial request in 2019 to the board. The board requested that we investigate the issue further. I'm going to present some of that investigation today, and Dr. Bordnave will present other investigation, other parts of that. So at issue is the interpretation highlighted there in yellow. This interpretation is not in the rules, statutes, or administrative code, but it is in the finer points of supervision that is posted on the board website, and it is without reference. It is the only part of the finer points of supervision in that document that is posted on the board website that is without a reference to a rule, statute, or administrative code. So looking into this, if you look at the definitions within the rules of assistive personnel, students are not included in that long definition, as you can see there. We also, when you look at the rules where it does talk about students, it does state that they must be under on-site supervision of a licensed physical therapist, but again, does not state that they should be classified as assistive personnel. And if you look at nationally, out of the 52 states and territories that include Puerto Rico and DC, only 12 states include students in with supervision restrictions. And we'll talk about others that define as assistive personnel or not assistive personnel. 15 states and territories don't even have supervision ratios at all in their practice act. Jim Ferris and his colleagues actually studied this and looked into the practice acts of all 50 states and all four territories, including Guam, U.S. Virgin Islands, Puerto Rico, and D.C. And they actually found kind of four categories of supervision when they're looking at supervision in students. 19 don't mention supervision of students and do not mention if students are assistive personnel. 6 have a limit on student supervision. 24 mentioned student supervision without limits. And then 5, including Arizona, have a limit on assistive personnel, but do not state that students fall under assistive personnel in their practice acts or rules. From this study, and you all have a PowerPoint of a poster for this study's presentation at the Educational Leadership Conference this past October. The results suggest that there's a lot of variability in the jurisdiction and supervision of students across the country. Most of those regulations leave room for interpretation, and these discrepancies should probably be addressed by regulatory bodies, both locally and nationally. And further research is indicated as to how this affects clinical education and other parts of education and practice. But the authors also suggest that the students who adequately meet school's didactic standards should be identified separately from assistive personnel because they are not paid employees. They are students under the supervision of an educator, and that this should help or advance the profession and education, hopefully. Last couple of points, kind of summing up our positions, and I'll hand over to Dr. Bordenave. We believe that this position statement from the board is not in line with the rule, statutes, and administrative code, and limits our ability to educate our students and impacts not only full-time terminal clinical experiences, but also the integrated clinical experiences, pro bono clinics, research, and other volunteer opportunities by our students. And I would just like to thank you for your time. I'm gonna stop sharing now and hand it over to Dr. Bordenave.
Thank you, Dr. Linsky. And thank you, Dr. Bustillo, and members of the board and members of the staff of the board for allowing us to come speak today. So what I'd like to speak to is just some informal data that we collected. So last time we came and spoke before the board, one of the questions was, is this an issue? So is supervision of students an issue? Are there cases brought before the board where students are, where there's a problem with supervision of students? So I'm going to speak about some informal anecdotal data that we collected. And then if If it's allowed, Dr. Tracy Ellison is here to speak about some more formal data that they're collecting and her initial analysis of some of that data. So hopefully we can shift to allowing Dr. Ellison to speak. Is that all right, Judy or Karen? Yeah, okay. I know she's not on the agenda, so I just want to make sure. So informally, we reached out to several of our colleagues. So Dr. Tawna Wilkinson, Dr. Ellison, several of us who are on the leadership group from the Arizona Physical Therapy and Physical Therapist Assistant programs, reached out to our colleagues who have the role of directors of clinical education and asked them if they had knowledge of any issues related to student supervision and board cases that were brought before their licensing boards. And we explored this in states in particular where we knew that there was either no limit on the number of students that were part of the of these statutes, or where students were not included at all in the statute relative to supervision. And out of the responses that we got, which was over in the state of New York, we had about 12 different DCEs who responded. Out of those states, we had no complaints that included students in those states. And again, some of those states were those without any limits on the number of students or that students were not included in that supervision ratio. So in addition to that, as you know, the DCEs in the state have been collecting more formal data about some of this information, some of which you received in a letter from them, and then they've been collecting additional data, and so I'm going to hand it over to Dr. Ellison to talk about what they have found in that initial analysis.
Thank you, Lori. So yes, we have been collecting more formal data to look at the safety aspect of things. So we've been reaching out to all of the state boards across the country. As one can imagine, each state board collects this information in a different way. So far, what we have is I was able to take a look at the board complaints from a group of states that are similar to us in the fact that we include students in this assisted personnel category, and a group of states who have a supervision ratio but do not include students in that supervision ratio. When you look at the numbers, and the numbers I've looked at are board complaints per PT, because obviously the number of board complaints is a little different in a state like Wyoming versus a state like Missouri. So if you look at that ratio and compare those two groups, there is no significant difference from a number of complaints, which one could maybe extrapolate has to do with safety. So that's the initial information we have. We're still trying to collect more info from more states and also really look at the types of complaints that are coming through, but it has been just a little bit challenging based on how states kind of collect and save that information.
So thanks, Tracy, for adding that. So that's all I have to add. So I guess we're available to answer questions or to be present while you have your discussion.
I guess, do you have recommendations?
Yes, we recommend, well, we feel that students are not formally included. That's part of what we think. And we also recommend that students not be included. And I do know that there's a, last August, I guess there was a call for a rules committee. And so if the rules are going to be reviewed, and there's discussion about how students might be included or formally included, our recommendation would be that students are not included in the ratio. That from an educational standpoint, they are supervised.
Yes. And the other request would be that new graduates, on the other issue, that new graduates are given a 9-month grace period for requirements for CEUs. So basically, if they get their initial license in year 22, that they do not then need to have CEUs prior to relicensing in August of 22, or recertification or relicense.
Relative to the first matter that you mentioned, that your recommendation, would you then also recommend a change in the limit? So right now the limit is 3 assistive personnel. If we don't include students, do we change the total number?
We don't necessarily have an opinion about that.
If students are not assisted personnel, then they would have to have only 2 paid assisted personnel, correct?
Well, Dr. Cornwell, based upon our assessment, there are states that do not place limits on this. And as Dr. Ellison pointed out, those states do not seem to have a higher rate of complaints per licensee than states that do have limits.
Yeah, I'd have to look at that data further. I'm very familiar with the disciplinary database, and good luck trying to find any the real answers that you really want, because the data is far, far, far from accurate. And
well, we appreciate that.
Students are not licensed, it's not likely that they're going to appear in a complaint. So.
Sure, but the complaint is filed against the licensee. That would be similar. You had a discussion about this earlier during the board meeting about the tech from one of the complaints, the initial reviews that was brought forward, that the licensee was the person against whom the charges would be made. So it's similar for other complaints, I assume, in other states.
But it's a complaint about supervision.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, Dr. Cornwell, members of the board. Just a reminder, it is on the agenda today just for a presentation to have a more substantive, conversation. It's my understanding that you're going to be considering possibly putting this on a future agenda later in the meeting.
I do have a quick question, though, for the educators. When you do like your student exit interviews or however you collect that data, do you have any, do you ask them how they feel they were supervised? Were they supervised adequately? Could you add a question into your deal about the number of people that their particular CI was supervising at the time that they were also supervising the student?
There's a few DCEs on here, so maybe they want to talk about that.
Hi, my name is Dr. Coleman, and I am a ACCE for a PTA program in Lake Havasu, and we absolutely ask that information on our clinical site surveys from our students. So we collect that data.
And just interesting to get their perspective on this as well.
Yeah, I agree with Dr. Coleman. We do the exact same thing, and there's even follow-up questions surrounding if that ratio, how it impacted their clinical experience, so any positives or negatives related to if there was another student present or anything like that.
Any further questions or discussion? All right. Well, I'd like to thank you all for your time and your presentation. And I hope that should we choose to agendize this, you'll be at our next meeting to answer further questions and further discuss the topic.
Thank you.
Okay, so I guess we're going to move on to our executive director's report. And so we'll turn the floor over to Ms. Chepius.
All right. Thank you very much. So with the first item for discussion, the you have in your board packets and you have in your board drive on a consistent basis now two new resource documents. They are the disciplinary options chart and a color-coded review process. These came about because when Dr. King took over as president, she was inquiring if there were additional documents or additional resources to help board members, considering that we also had new board members as well, to help them understand the options of various components of the hearing process or the disciplinary process or the initial review process. And so we as staff took to hunting through the files, and we dusted off some old files and found that indeed in board packets previously that there had been some documents. So we reviewed those for currency, and we've made some adjustments to them, and we've provided them to you as resources. They are contained in your drive. They are contained in the folder, I believe it's the administrative resources folder. But we've presented the information in two different ways. So if you've reviewed either of these documents, you'll notice that they contain a lot of similar information. It's just presented, one is a little bit more visual, one is a little bit more text-based. So they are provided for you, and we wanted to bring this forth in a meeting just to give you an opportunity in case you had any questions, any concerns about these documents or needed clarification on any of it. So I welcome those questions if you have them.
I don't have any questions, but these are definitely very helpful documents. That's an area that I've kind of struggled with, and I typically will kind of listen to what we're discussing and what options are available, but this kind of empowers me a little bit more now that I feel more comfortable making one of those type of decisions.
Good, that's the intent.
Yeah, I think it's as a new board member, these are very, very helpful documents, and I have been very grateful to see them and be able to read through them and kind of get a feel for what our options are. I think they are very helpful, and I'm very grateful to our staff for making these available again.
Fantastic. And just for the record, these are living documents, so to speak. So in the industry that we're in, I guess, things can and do change. So when those changes come around, or we recognize that something is presented in a way that needs some clarification or whatever, we will be making those updates. So it's entirely possible that these may be updated from time to time. We'll do our best to keep you informed when those updates occur, but by all means, you know, be vigilant about using a current copy that's found in the folder whenever you are using it. So.
Sure. I just wish we would have had this 4 years ago when I was on the board, when I was a new member. I had to learn it the hard way.
Yeah. It was a steep learning curve.
Well, I'm glad they're helpful, and you've all, those of you who've learned at the School of Hard Knocks or straight up from documents like this, thank you for taking the time to learn it all. So we appreciate that. If there's no other questions or comments, then we can move on to the next component. Okay. So the National Conference of State Legislatures, the NCSL, is holding a National Occupational Licensing Meeting. I was advised of this by my fellow executive directors from the other state agencies, healthcare-related, licensing-related, that this might be a conference of interest. This might be an opportunity for learning. This might be an opportunity to engage, listen to, learn from, and otherwise access the legislators that are making some decisions. Regulation and licensing is a topic of interest today, in today's world. And so this conference is being held in June, the 19th through the 21st of this year in Las Vegas, Nevada. The conference registration itself is free to government employees. So if the board determines that this is a reasonable or a viable need to be present at this meeting, it would constitute some travel and hotel fees. So I bring this to the board to determine what you think about this, whether you think staff should attend this. And if you do, I will proceed with arrangements to make that happen.
Mr. Harris, just a point of order. Can we author, do we need to agendize this before we authorize it, or can we authorize it now?
The way it is listed on the agenda, I do believe that you can take action today because okay. It does say review, discussion, and possible action regarding staff participation at this conference. Thank you.
Judy, you probably have contact with several other boards here in the state. You know their executive directors. Have any of them attended this meeting? And if so, what was their reaction?
There are several of them that are doing exactly the same thing right now. They're bringing it to their boards, or they are already signed up to attend. There's, from what I'm hearing, there's a lot of interest in this. I'm not certain, Dr. Cornwall, if this is a first annual or a regular type of meeting. It could just be that the conference itself is hosting this meeting this year. That I really don't know. So I don't have the answer, I believe, to your full question, but I do know that there has been a lot of interest in attending this year's meeting.
Do you know if the Federation sends delegates?
I do not know if the, you know, it wouldn't surprise me at all. There are a lot of these national organizations that they do attend, that they do send one of the generally want the vice presidents to attend. I did not ask that question yet. I can't.
My question is really just, I don't know if it's going to be a good meeting for you or not. It could be an outstanding meeting. It could be kind of a flop. If they cover nothing, but I may not get a whole lot out of it. If, however, it's a smattering of everything, you may get something more. So, and maybe reaching out to Rich or somebody else, the Federation might be a good idea to see if anyone's attended, what kind of value they get. But I'm not opposed doing it, at least sending you 1 year and see what happens.
Yeah, do we have an idea how much it will cost? It doesn't seem, I mean, we're talking about what, a 3-day travel and hotel stay?
It would be it's a Sunday night and a Monday night. I believe the conference ends on a Tuesday, so it would be a 2-night stay. The preliminary investigation that I did with respect to airlines and with respect to rooms, the conference itself has reserved a block of rooms. At last check, that block had been filled, but they were seeking additional space. So at this point, it was roughly around the travel and hotel, roughly around $600 to $800 is my very, you know, just generic guesstimate on the research that I've done so far.
Yeah, I have no problem authorizing that. You know, if we think there's a possibility this could be helpful or beneficial, it seems like a good opportunity. And you know, the more involved we are in these kind of things, probably the better.
I would agree with that as well. And some of the breakouts looked pretty interesting. So I think it's like Dr. Cornwall said, it's certainly worth, you know, 1 year of checking it out.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm in agreement. I would support it as well. I was looking over the agenda and some of it does look interesting. If we feel like it would be beneficial, then I would support funding it.
So this would be you, Judy, that would be going, basically?
Yeah, at this point, yes.
Okay. All right, I'll make a motion that we authorize Judy Chepius to continue to pursue attendance at this NCSL meeting in June.
Second.
Any further discussion? All right, let's go ahead and vote.
It's been moved and seconded to authorize Judy Chepius to continue pursuing attendance at the National Conference of State Legislatures National Occupational Licensing Meeting to occur in June. Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Cornwall?
Yes.
Mr. Griffin?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Motion passes. Thank you. I'll continue to look into it.
Great. Thank you.
And then next up are the financials. They have been uploaded to your drive. Do you have any questions about what's presented? Okay, then the next item of general interest is the licensing and certifications that have happened in March of 2022. We approved our very first interstate telehealth registration. So that was something new and exciting, but those numbers are available for further discussion. Any questions I can answer?
Looks like we've been busy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Absolutely. I think staff can attest to that.
Yes.
All
No, I think this looks great. You guys do a great job, and I'm grateful for the excellent efforts that you guys put on this. But you know, the information you're providing looks great.
Thanks, Josh.
Yeah, thank you, everyone.
Thank you. And with that, I turn it back over to you, Dr. Bustillo, for future agenda items.
Okay, so do we have any calls for future agenda items?
I would move to add, I'm not sure the best way to word this, so please correct me if I'm wrong with it, but add a future discussion on the presentation that was brought to us by the education group.
And to clarify, Mr. Leone, do you want both topics to be agendized?
Yeah, I would like to see both topics included.
Would it be better to agendize those separately? So in case we want to take action on one but not the other?
Oh, yeah. Maybe that's a better way to go.
I would confer with that, especially because I'm looking at it now. I have some questions as to how much authority we have to take action on some of those items.
Well, we still have a moratorium on rule writing. So
right.
it's some of it's out of our hands. So I don't know if, I don't know how you, Mark, you'll have to just figure out how to agendize it. We may not be able to take any action because if it requires a rule, we can't make rules.
Well, and I would just ask Dr. Cornwell, members of the board, that you kind of consider that in discussing whether or not you even want to put this this particular issue, you know, on the agenda, knowing that, you know, at this time, there's probably nothing that you can do to modify the requirements.
Mr. Harris, regarding the student issue that the members were talking about, could we take action in the form of some kind of an advisory letter or something, since it seemed like that was outside of the rule, at least for part of it, some part of it was outside of the rulemaking system and seemed to be an interpretation issue? Is there any kind of advisory opinion authorized?
Yeah, we don't have the authority to issue advisory letters. We do have the ability to adopt substantive policy statements, but substantive policy statements are generally clarifications of the board's interpretation of a rule or a statute. We can't use it to kind of expand our interpretations of existing laws and rules. And so we just have to kind of be sensitive to that.
Josh, are you talking about the one about supervision or the one about continuing ed?
Supervision. I think the one about continuing ed may be just outside of our hands. Given the way the rules are written, I read through them. I mean, I agree that it would be like, it seems like a great idea to give a grace period, but I don't think the rules allow us to do that. But regarding supervision, at least from what I was understanding, from what the educators were saying and from the documents, it seems like there may be some legal gray area in the rules there that perhaps a policy statement would assist with. And that was the only area that I was looking at that for specifically.
Yeah. And my thought on the discussion regarding the continuing education is, yeah, we may not have the ability to change anything, you know, with the way that the rules are written, but, I'm just not sure how this has been handled in the past. I've had, and again, this is more, you know, hearsay from other people. But you know, I've had some people tell me they didn't have to get the continuing education if they were licensed right before the renewal period. I've had some people tell me they did have to get it. I think if anything, maybe we can come up with some sort of a strategy as to make people known to the fact that that is in statutes. They are required to get it regardless of, you know, when they get licensed, if they fall within that time frame. and maybe help to better prepare those students. Because students do have the ability to get continuing education. I don't know if maybe that would be a better process for them where they could start working to build that continuing education even before they graduate.
So it sounds like we have some items to at least discuss, and it sounds like there's at least a possibility for some action. Giovanni, if you're okay agendizing those separately, I'd second your motion.
Yeah, I would move to agendize both the continuing education topic and the supervision topics, but as separate topics on the agenda.
Excuse me, just a moment. Mr. Harris, do we actually need a motion, or can the board just list the topics they'd like agendized in the future?
I think just directing staff to put those two issues list those two issues separately is sufficient.
Okay.
Cool.
Okay. Is there anything else that we should add to an agenda in the future?
I don't think so.
Gosh, you're breaking up a little bit.
They're burning on good.
Josh, I don't know that the members heard the entirety of your intention. Your phone was breaking up.
You might be frozen.
And you're frozen.
Or he's really good at being still.
I didn't realize it was so cold down there.
Yeah. Judy?
Yes.
You know, the topic we discussed, is that something that we could bring up, or I don't want to.
It'll have to come with the future agendas.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Is that something that you could bring up, or is that something that has to come from the board members?
I think that's something that has to be part of their discussion when it's agendized as a discussion.
Right. So is that what I'm saying is, can we put that on the agenda for discussion, I guess, is what I'm saying. I just don't know if us as staff can do that, or if that's something that has to come, that the board has to put on the agenda to discuss.
Mr. Harris, do you have any advice on that? Can a recommendation come
to staff? Yeah, thank you, Dr. Bautista, members of the board. I do think Judy, as the executive director, probably has some discretion on what to be placed on the agenda. She may want to run it by the executive officers. However, if Judy can also just, bring it up if she wants direction from the board.
Okay.
So I'll just kind of defer to Judy and how she wants to handle it.
We'll leave it.
Not sure what you can do.
Yeah, I think, Monica, I think when the discussions are agendized, we'll place that information in front of the board members so they can weigh in on those thoughts.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Anything else on a future agenda? All right. I'll entertain a motion for adjournment.
So
I motion we adjourn.
Second.
It has been moved and seconded to adjourn the meeting. Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leon? Leone?
Yes.
Yes. Dr. Cornwall?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
It has been moved and seconded to adjourn the meeting. The meeting is adjourned at 11:09 and the recording will stop. Thank you, everybody. Have a great day.
Thank you, everybody.